Armchair Sports Talk. Saltier than an everything bagel with lox.
All right, welcome into Armchair Sports Talk. We are back, guys. I'm your host, Derek Dorsch. And joining me on the phone right now, because he's got a real job, is Russ Ivanek.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Happy New Year, buddy.
Hey, Happy New Year. Kind of bummed it's only the two of us, but, you know, the dynamic duo, Thunder and Lightning, Ham and Cheese, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, we got this.
That last one's a perfect, perfect one. We don't have a doctor here, so clearly we're not the intelligent two.
No. And
the bald one, Mr. Salty, you know, he's got kid problems, which, again, we understand he's got kids and we're respecting of it, but come on, man.
Yeah, well, this will just be a heart-healthy episode, half the sodium.
It'll also be a lot lighter because we don't hate everything about Detroit.
Yeah, well.
All right, so we're going to lead it off here. Our Detroit Lions finished the season not how we would like them to finish. They, you know, you see the shades of hope, and, I mean, how much did you love that trick play? How much did you love that trick play?
Oh, that was such a blast. It was even funnier that Alabama came out and broke it out against Stafford's alma mater the next day.
Israel.
But, no, that was a lot of fun. It makes you wonder where it was all season long.
It really does, and we're going to get back to that, too, because a little bit later we want to talk about is stuff like that, what we can more expect out of Jim Bob Cooter. But what I want to talk about first is we don't finish the season the way we want to, and the Lions decide to part ways with head coach Jim Caldwell. Now, the discussion around the league is the leader for the job is Matt Patricia, defensive coordinator for the New England Patriots. But it came out the other day that Matt Patricia kind of favors that Giants job. I was talking with a few people here at work. A, do you still think he should be considered the number one candidate? And B, do you think that maybe some of this, because Patricia hasn't commented, maybe the Giants kind of putting something out there, trying to maybe mix it up a little bit?
I mean, I think that's part of it. I still see him as the favorite for the Lions. Hey, maybe some of that's wishful thinking, but some of the reports I've heard counter to those Giants reports make me think that. But to your second part, I think, hey, who's the biggest media market in the country? New York. Who desperately needs a high-profile coach? New York. And it's hard to get a more high-profile coach than the one coming from under Belichick. So it makes a lot of sense that they would throw reports out like that if they had any sniff of possibility of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, another big thing that they're saying is contributing to this is he's from New York. He, you know, he grew
right
up in New York, and that little home, you know, love and home kind of feeling. But
everyone loves the home cooking story.
ESPN put it out the other day of they listed five coaching jobs that are available right now as head coaches. And they asked, mm-hmm, what is the most appealing of them? I believe, if I remember correctly, it was the Colts, the Cardinals, the Lions, the Giants, and I am 100% blanking on what the fifth one was. But for argument's sake, until it comes back to me, we'll say those four. And I got to think, looking at that, the Lions is the most appealing of those jobs.
Oh, I think they're the most playoff ready. I mean, you could make an argument that maybe Arizona because of that defense, but they have no quarterback now.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, maybe if someone like Shermer goes there and he happens to bring Case Keenum with him and they can replicate that magic, maybe we're talking, but that's a very specific scenario.
Absolutely. And you know what? The last one was actually Chicago. Chicago, but they've already filled the position.
Right, yeah. Right.
So anyway, you were saying, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, that's exactly it. I think the Lions are the most attractive option out there, and that I don't think that's just homerism because we went 9-7. Maybe the talent isn't exactly reflecting of that record, but you got to think they're closer to the playoffs than any of the other openings.
Yeah, absolutely, and I that was the point I made is that Arizona's got no quarterback, or at least no quarterback that they know they can rely on. Their best receiver is reaching it in age. He's not going to be able to do this much longer, if at all. They have running backs, but right now, this past year, their go-to running back was Adrian Peterson, who proved he's not AP that he was a few years ago. So that's a job that the offense is in total disarray. You don't know what you're getting there. You look at the Colts. The Colts have some potential, but Andrew Luck can't stay healthy. And there's no signs pointing that he's going to be the Andrew Luck coming out of Stanford that, ooh, everybody saw Chuck that 78-yard pass in his pro day that, oh, he's the next big thing. So that's a job that is a big question mark.
Yeah, he can't stay upright or stay healthy because that O-line is about as good as a broken-down gate.
It's true. It's very – I mean, but you have to contribute to that. If you don't have a good – because we've experienced this for years, having quarterbacks who probably weren't as bad as they seemed, but the O-line made them look so much worse. Well, you can be a great quarterback. If you only have 1 second to throw the ball, you're not going to do anything. There's been too many careers ruined in that direction.
Oh, yeah, we've seen it firsthand plenty, like you were saying.
It's true. And, I mean, obviously Chicago hired a coach, but we're not going to worry. And we've talked about Chicago. I see some serious potential in that offense. So that's actually a job that, had Chicago not filled the position, that you could have argued that may have been just as appealing of a job.
Right. What makes me feel a little bit better about Chicago is they just hired the guy who was calling the plays for that terrible Chiefs collapse
in that
playoff game.
Yeah, it's true.
Maybe they'll spot us a few of those a year. That'd be okay.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then the last one was the Giants coaching position, which that to me does not look like an appealing job because I think there's, like, the same as they talk about the issues in the Patriots locker room, I think there's issues in this Giants locker room. Eli doesn't seem like he's got it anymore. He seems very off. And I granted he lost some talent this year, in receivers. But he just doesn't seem to be all the way there. That defense doesn't look too impressive to me. And in my personal opinion, I think that Odell Beckham, for all his talent, I think you're going to see him be a huge detriment to the team because he's just too much of a personality. He doesn't know when to turn it off and just go play football.
I think he could get that way if things continue to deteriorate in New York. I think what they need is a player's coach, a guy that's going to come in there and bring the room back together. But it's also got to be a guy. I think that whole job being attractive is contingent on you looking at quarterbacks at the top of the draft and going, I can do something with that guy.
Yeah.
And if you're a coach and you can't say that about one of the top guys, you don't take New York because that team is going to go down otherwise unless they get a new quarterback in the next 3 years.
Which all signs point to them taking either Rosen or Darnold, whoever number two is, but The thing is, and you made a good point, they need a player's coach. You know who would be great for that position? The guy who's the other candidate for our job, and that's Vrabel. That guy played in the NFL, knows what's expected in the NFL, knows how to help these young guys manage, the life. And I think he'd be a great coach for them. Not to say that, take him so we can have Patricia.
But in truth,
we don't know what either of these guys are going to be. Neither of these guys have ever had a head coaching job in the NFL.
Nope.
They're both defensive coordinators, but if you think about it, Vrabel is the defensive coordinator for, in my opinion, when they're healthy, one of the best defenses in the NFL. I mean, when you have J.J. Watt coming off the edge and Brian Cushing doing
it. It's like cheating.
It's cheating, yeah. And then they've got, what's his name? The guy that blew up the Michigan running back a few years ago.
Jadeveon Clowney.
So like, they have a defensive line that like is a defensive coordinator's wet dream. And then you look at the Patriots. The Patriots always have one of the best defenses. I mean, they've got some – the Patriots, they seem to find talent out of nowhere. Like they just seem to – like they draft these guys and go, oh, look, you played football for a year. Here, you can come be on our defensive line, and all of a sudden you're a Pro Bowler. So,
like Kyle Van Noy, who couldn't even get on the field for us, goes there and he led the team in tackles.
But so that's the thing. These two have kind of been thrusted into they're the top two for us, but we don't even know what they can do. For all we know, they come here and their first season is a 3-13 season because they don't know how to do it all. They know how to handle one aspect, but when you're the head coach, you can't just say, hey, offense, you go do you. I'm gonna focus over here. So. Again, I think this is the Detroit Lions. We could make a bad decision just as easily as we can make a good decision. And I want to be high on whoever we get. But at the same time, it's a big question mark.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. You're kind of playing the lottery. So the best you can do is, I guess, sit back and hope. And it's a good thing we don't have Justin here to hear us say that.
I was just about to say, are you ready for your dose of salt? Here we go.
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah.
So we texted Justin the talking points for today just to get a little bit out of him, and this is the one he decided to respond to. My two cents on the coaching position for the Lions. In theory, I don't care who the coach is as long as he is consistently good. The team already is mediocre by position week to week, and we need a coach that is stable, smart, and reliable enough to be the leader of the group. Also, counting to 11 is pretty important, and this coach needs to be a mistake-free one where we can grow with the team. Expect them to be the leader first, and then the team will follow. How could you expect the current team with Caldwell to ever be consistent when the coach never is? Salty.
At least he signed it appropriately.
He did. He was very good. He punctuated and everything.
Oh boy!
Now you brought it up, and I completely forgot to bring this up, but I wanna circle back to it. You brought up the horrible collapse by the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yep.
I'm assuming you saw that game.
Yeah, I saw a good portion of it.
Okay, was it a fumble? It was a fumble. I'll let you ponder for a minute. It was a fumble. You can alter it. You can twist it. You can rethink it any way you want. That was a fumble.
Yeah. Well, it's
And again, is this like? And not, again, I'm going to get a little salty here myself. You think back to the Atlanta game where we got screwed. Is this not another time where the refs kind of decided they didn't really like? It was a first quarter thing, but that one thing completely alters the state of the game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and as Lions fans, yeah, we know a thing or two about that. It's been shocking a little bit how there's this growing unrest between fans and the refs, players and the refs. I wonder if it isn't a function of we're passing more, the game's getting faster. What changes are we making to help these refs out? Maybe we need another set of eyes. I don't know what it is, but something's got to change because it seems like more and more high-impact calls are going the wrong way.
And my thing for this, and this is going to be a little bit of a hot button, I fully expect, you know, you're probably not going to agree with me on this because you're asking for a problem here. Everything should be reviewable. Everything. Because the problem is you say, this can't be reviewed or this can't be reviewed or this can't be reviewed. Well, when it's on a giant jumbotron in front of everyone and the whole nation is saying, yeah, you called that wrong. And the other coach can't say, yeah, I'm going to throw the flag. You need to look at that. That's clearly, you know, a problem. You clearly made the wrong call there and it's not reviewable. It screws it. It screws up the whole game because these guys who are responsible for making the calls for these games screw it up. They blindly miss it and it messes up the game. He was never going forward, so you can't establish forward progress. When you're backpedaling, there's no forward progress.
Yeah.
It's the same as that that touchdown that I have to use air quotes here, the touchdown catch with the Pittsburgh against New England that was overturned. It's the same with that late hit that we had on Tampa's tight end that luckily that was able to be challenged. But if you can't challenge that, that screws up the game. The same as the Megatron catch. That was a catch. The guy was laying on the ground, rolling around, and he dropped the ball, and it's not a catch.
Oh,
so
I know.
It's just one of those things where you're asking to open up a whole case of worms by making everything reviewable. You're potentially saying the game's going to be a lot slower. But at the same time, you only get a certain amount of challenges, so the coaches kind of have to be strategic here. But on something that monumental, I think any coach, even Jim Caldwell, may have thrown the flag on that one.
Jim Schwartz probably would have thrown three flags on it.
No, Jim Schwartz would have tackled the other coach.
Yeah, no kidding. No, I think you're onto something, and as long as we keep it to just about everything can be challengeable, then we don't get into slowing the game down as much because then we're still talking about, at most, three stoppages due to these reviews.
Yeah.
And I think that might be a way to help get the calls right sometimes. Give them a chance to, hey, take a second look at it. I think you might be onto something.
I mean, like I said, I think, again, like with every other, when you talk about a rule change, I think it needs to be refined and thought out correctly. But I think that by giving these coaches the chance to, hey, listen, anything that happens, you can challenge. But remember, you've got a finite amount of challenges and there's only so much you can, you know, we can do to alter it. I feel like those little tic-tac things that people cry about, like, was it a false start or did the defensive lineman make him move kind of thing? Those are going to become very tic-tacky, and these big plays that are game-altering are going to become more the focus, and we got a chance to fix those, and you've got a little more smooth of a game.
Right.
So
speaking of coaching challenges, Do we want to come up to the Lions challenge of finding a new coach? Talking about some of those candidates?
Yeah, I was just getting ready to circle to you on that one. I just wanted to get your opinion.
I had a good pun for it, so I had to use
it. Yeah, you worked it out perfectly. So I'm going to say, give me what you got.
All right, so, I mean, we'll listen them off. Matt Patricia, Steve Wilks, Mike Vrabel, Pat Shurmur.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Some people want to see Cooter in it. I'm not ready for him to be a head coach yet.
He's not there.
I don't think he's there yet. So what I did to try and get ready for this, because, hey, engineering numbers background, right?
Yeah.
I looked at the last 10 Super Bowl winners. I looked at how many times they had been a head coach, how many times before their current position when they won the Super Bowl they had been a head coach, how many years before, how many years with that team. And then I also looked at how many times they had been some kind of coordinator, offensive, defensive, special teams, in the NFL before they got their first job. What I found, a little bit interesting, 4 of the 10, the head coaching job that won them the Super Bowl was their very first job. So that's a little encouraging considering 3 of the 4 main candidates that we have for the Lions job, it would be their first time, you know, having a head coach job. So that isn't as much of a hindrance as you might think.
And for the people that, you know, don't have all this in front of them, the four are
Harbaugh with Baltimore, McCarthy with the Packers,
yep.
Sean Payton in New Orleans, and then Mike Tomlin with the Steelers. Those are the four.
Yep.
What they all have in common, however, is they all spent at least some time as a coordinator, and all but 2 of those total 10 Super Bowl winners spent at least 3 years as a coordinator, right? The exceptions being Tomlin was only a defensive coordinator for 1 year, and Coughlin was actually never a coordinator in the NFL before he took his head coaching job. Now, he's a little different because he held a ton of different positions in college beforehand, so he was far from inexperienced when he took the head coaching job. But as we translate that over to our candidates, Patricia, 6 years as a defensive coordinator. Steve Wilks, 1 year as a defensive coordinator. Mike Vrabel, 1 year as a defensive coordinator. Pat Shurmur, he's been a head coach once for 2 years for the Browns.
Can that really count, though, as a real head coaching job?
Technically, I think it's actually a little bit of a benefit for him because he learned what not to do. And it's a learn from your mistakes kind of league. But the big thing with him is he was a coordinator 3 different times for a total of 6 years. Obviously, that number is a little small considering he's relatively new over in Minnesota.
Yeah.
But that actually would be more times than any of the last 10 Super Bowl coaches had been a coordinator.
Okay.
So that's interesting. Oh, only one more than the next closest, but you wonder if a resume like that makes him a little sign that he might be kind of a Wade Phillips type, where great coordinator gets a shot as a head coach every now and again, but really doesn't pull it off because his sweet spot is as a coordinator.
Yeah, you know? No, I get that.
So I worry about that. But, I mean, me looking at it, Matt Patricia with those 6 years as a coordinator, that seems to fit the profile of, like, Mike McCarthy, who was exactly that amount of time before he got his first job. Harbaugh, 10 years as a special teams coordinator before he got his first job. Sean Payton, 3 years, so a little more than that. It kind of fits the mold of those first-time coaches that get a lot of success.
Okay. Now, my one question to you, though, because you mentioned that I know from hearing around the station that Wilks is almost an afterthought now. It's really focused in, but we still will bring him up because obviously it's an open position. The Vrabel only having 1 year as a defensive coordinator. Now, does all the playing experience, do you think that's got to be factored in when you're weighing him against someone who, like Patricia, who's had 6 or 5-plus years as a coordinator, or Shurmur, who actually has been a head coach and has success in the NFL as a coordinator? Does the playing experience get factored in there to kind of keep him afloat? Because by just experience alone coaching, he can't measure up to those other two.
Right. I think it keeps him in the conversation as a leader of men. He can be a voice in a locker room like a lot of other candidates absolutely cannot. I mean, he's so well-respected. I mean, there's this old joke that he is he's the only guy that can make Bill Belichick laugh, right? That he had that much of a presence while he was in that locker room. So, no, I think it does keep him in that role. I mean, if he gets a head coaching job, would I like to see more of an X's and O's type of coach be one of his coordinators? Yeah, I think that would really benefit the team's success. But, no, I don't think his lack of coaching experience completely removes him from a possibility.
No, I agree. I think, you know, the upside, too, is if you look at those last 10 years of coaching experience or of Super Bowl winning coaches, only if I'm not mistaken, and I could be mistaken, only one of them has NFL playing experience. Gary Kubiak. Kubiak was the only one. Belichick never played in the NFL. Pete Carroll never played in the NFL. Harbaugh's brother.
I'd have to check Sean Payton. That's the only one that I'm not sure of.
I will look right now while we're talking, but I'm almost positive Sean Payton was not a NFL player. Now, again, I could be completely incorrect on that, but Coughlin maybe, but it would have been quite a while ago, so the player presence gets knocked out by the coaching experience.
On a technicality, Sean Payton, he played 1 year for the Bears.
Okay, yeah, I see that. He played
on a technicality.
He was one of the, I hate to use the word, he was one of the scrub players, scab players. When they were on a strike, he was one of the scab players.
Right.
For that team. So, a little different.
Kubiak had extensive NFL history, mostly as a backup.
Kubiak was always backup. But look at Jason Garrett. He was Troy Aikman's backup for 15 years, and he's proved that he was able to make the transition, and he's a locker room guy. He can look at these guys and say, I know what you're going through, because guess what? I went through it too. So I think that player aspect has to hold some serious weight, because from a coaching aspect, yeah, he can't really hold up with the other guys because they've done this a little longer and they've had a little more success doing it. But
right.
I think the playing aspect is really, really weighs in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, I think it has to kind of be balanced with more of an X's and O's experienced coordinator to go with them. Kind of like Sean McVay was a young guy, came in, they teamed Wade Phillips with them, and they're off to a bunch of success, right? If someone like that goes with them, I think you can kind of limit the impact of that quote-unquote coaching lack of experience.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he could be real successful.
Now, you mentioned Sean McVay, and that was a question I wanted to ask you. Do you think that Sean, what would happen with him? He comes in so young, has immediate success. Are you worried that the Lions might kind of, or any NFL franchise, might kind of try to jump on that trend and go with that young guy who seems like the hot, the up-and-rising kind of person? And, because let's be honest, that's probably a fluke, that you're not going to have that happen.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of it because I'm sure some teams are going to do it. This is such a copycat league. So, hey, it worked out. It's working out really well. They made the playoffs after looking abysmal. Somebody else is going to try and do it.
But, I mean, do you think that might also be a little bit of why Vrabel's in head coaching conversations? Obviously, Vrabel is in his 40s, but he's very new to coaching. He's new to the NFL in that regard. Is that kind of why it's like, hey, young offensive or defensive coordinator, we can maybe he gets in there and gives us that little spark we need.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yes, Sean McVay has started to open the door a little bit to bringing some younger, fresh ideas into coaching. And that's a good thing. That's how progress happens with coaching.
I like it. Okay, now, obviously, we'll say that Shermer, Vrabel, and Patricia are the big three for us that are left. Mm-hmm. They're our big three. You got two defensive coordinators, one offensive coordinator of those three. Now, Matt Stafford has openly said he would like to see Jim Bob Cooter stay here and be the offensive coordinator. There's something there connection-wise. And I don't disagree with it because if you ask me, we're not going to be able to run the ball anyway. I said this when we were talking ahead of time. Unless Jerome Bettis or Ricky Williams, when he was in the Dolphins, comes back and is our running back, we're not going to be able to run the ball. It's not going to happen. Not anytime soon, anyway. And a lot of that can also be attributed to we had some serious offensive line issues this year. No one was healthy. We had a rotating wheel of offensive linemen. So maybe keeping this coordinator makes sense. Now, I ask you, do you think it's going to take us having to hire a defensive-minded coach or first-time coach be the two defensive coordinators in order for Cooter to stay? Because if Shurmur comes, I feel like there'd be a little too much of an offensive butting of heads.
Right. And from us talking a little before, I know we disagree a little bit on this, but that's, hey, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think if Jim Bob Cooter is going to stay, and by the way, just Jim Bob Cooter. I love saying it. I can't stop saying it.
I love it. It's great. Jim Bob Cooter.
Right. If he's going to stay, I think it has to be a situation that's where he fits in with the new head coach, obviously.
Yeah.
But I see it really only with Pat Shurmur coming in, because if one of these defensive coordinators come in who've never been a head coach, I would like to see some kind of offensive coordinator with head coaching experience to come in and supplement them, so they can focus a little bit more on the defense, on what they know, and lean on this former head coach, offensive coordinator, to kind of help the transition along. Now, does that help the players transition? No, because then it's going to be a very drastic scheme change. But I think that's worth it in being able to support your new head coach, because things are going to change regardless. And if Stafford needs this offensive coordinator to be successful, why are we paying him top five money, you know?
No, I
completely
agree.
At a certain point, you gotta start going, all right, Matt, we got to make this work. It's got to be you.
Okay. No, I agree.
A little torn there.
Now, I guess my question is going to kind of break up into two parts. And
yeah,
the first one would be, you say you'd like to see if not a former head coach, at least a NFL veteran established offensive coordinator come in,
right,
and kind of help them. Now, my thing is, though, do you think that could potentially lead to some problems? You've got this guy like, I don't know, like Norv Turner or Mike Martz. Like, he's obviously not in the NFL anymore, but he's a big offensive name, or
used to be a big guy.
Linehan, yeah. Do you think that could lead to some problems, because you've got a young coordinator or a young head coach who's really just learning as he goes a little bit, and you've got this guy who's already done it a bunch of times, and while you're hoping you get the wisdom, at the same time, it's kind of one of those, why are you the head coach? Why are you, like, you should know this. This is your job. I'm supposed to be reporting to you. You not coming to me all the time. I worry too much that it would lead to some problems, or it would lead to a short turnaround, because if this young coach comes here and we have some serious success, they might start going, hey, that offensive coordinator is pretty good, and then we lose him.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
I get, from a human nature standpoint, yeah, it's possible. From a personal standpoint, if I've got a coordinator in there that can't respect the head coach, I don't want him in there anyway.
I see what you're saying. And yeah, I mean, that's a great way to look at it.
Right. And if you hire the head coach first, then you're less likely to run into a situation where the offensive coordinator is going to be upset with his position, that he's not the head coach, that he has to answer to someone younger or less experienced, because they'll know what they're getting into ahead of time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, and then my second point, and I know I made this point to you earlier when we were talking. If you're a young coach, first-time head coach, and you come in and you have this quarterback who's already established in the league, he's considered one of the top quarterbacks, and he's kind of saying, I'd really like this coach to stay. I think I see success.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want one of your first steps to be, I hear what you're saying, but no, I'm going to go this way? And I get it. It's your team. You're the head coach. But I feel like that could make or break you, because then you have one or two years of not as much success. They're going to get rid of the coach before they're going to get rid of the guy who they're paying top league money and is the guy they believe could get them to where they want to be.
That's actually a really good point. It could kind of sour the room on the head coach starting. If Jim Bob Cooter is so beloved, and I know Stafford has stumped for him a number of times. So I guess if it's one of those things, you really got to sit down as a head coach and go, do we agree on concepts? Can we mesh? Can we work together? Because to memory, I don't think any of these coaches have worked with Jim Bob before. So that's you know, maybe you sit down for a week or two and you just talk a bunch to him. I know he was involved in the interview process at times. Like, mm-hmm. Matt Patricia got to talk to Jim Bob Cooter while he was there. You bring up a good point. I guess if that's the case, I need the defensive coordinator replacing Terrell Austin to have been a head coach, because it scares me having a head coach and two coordinators that had never been a head coach before.
And I mean, I get that. I agree with you on that. That you want some kind of veteran presence in the coaching staff, someone who can kind of say, "Listen, I've been doing this for 30 years, and I see where you're going with this. And while it's not the wrong way to go, doing this might put us in a little bit better situation. Because if it's a bunch of guys who are first timers or kind of new to their position, you're kind of flying blind and hoping what you're doing is the right way to do it."
Right. No, that's exactly it. I think in the short term, it would reward us to keep Jim Bob Cooter around because of the players' transition to whatever new system or scheme we're doing with this new coaching staff. I worry about the couple years after that, because I guess we'll find out how much of it was Jim Caldwell and Ron Prince influencing it, but to not have a running game like at all. Yeah, the passing game's really good, but not have any kind of running game, that makes me wonder how effective Jim Bob Cooter really is.
No, I agree. And this is going to be a weird transition, but I just know it's something we both brought up talking about. Speaking of, you know, getting a new head coach, the Oakland Raiders decide to fire Jack Del Rio and replace him with Chucky. They decide to go with John Gruden. They gave him, if you ask me, a little too much money for this job. I mean, 10 years, $100 million. Do you like the move of bringing in a guy who's a league favorite? Or do you think this was more of a kind of desperation, let's go with what we know the fans liked and see if it works again? Because the guy's been out of coaching for almost a decade.
Hey, I'll tell you what, man.
I'll
tell you what. If I'm selling bananas anywhere in Oakland, I better have more bananas.
I'll tell you what, man. I like where you're at with that. Your head is right there, man. I tell you, I like it. I like it.
I like it from a PR move standpoint. I think this team is going to Vegas. They're moving, right? They're already leaving Oakland. And this is a get people in the stadium now and get them excited on the way to wherever they end up. Because this guy is a national face. John Gruden, everybody knows John Gruden, who's watched football at any week, right? You see the Gruden's grinders, you see the QB camp stuff.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and he's won a Super Bowl before. He's coached in Oakland before. He's had some success. So from a PR standpoint, yeah, it's good. 10 years, $100 million. Whoa.
Well, I mean, he will be making more than a majority of his players will be making.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
and guaranteed, yeah. $100 million. Yeah, no, that part's insane.
It is.
But it reminds me of Al Davis, honestly. And it's one of the first moves that his son has done since Al Davis' passing that really, really reminds me of Al, because it seems like something he would have done.
Well, and that's one of the first things Gruden said in his press conference. I used to get calls at 3 a.m. from Al Davis. Now I'm going to get them from Davis Jr., because it really is. You felt Al Davis in every bit of this. Just an over-the-top move that you're kind of wondering, what are you swinging for? Like, what? There's nothing there. And you're not to say that Gruden isn't a good coach and can't be a good coach in the NFL, but, you know, I just think that this was a little bit of a reach.
Yeah, I think so for a guy that's been out of coaching for 10 years. But I think Mark Davis looked at him and said, I think we have the same haircut. We can make this work.
It's true. Now, what's the window, though? Like, how much time do you give him? Obviously, because the other thing I was discussing the other day is, when is the last time we have seen this? We've seen someone, he never fully stepped away from the game, because obviously he was an analyst and he did all these QB camps and all that stuff. But when's the last time we saw someone take that long of a reprieve from the game of football in this regard and come back to the top? Not come in as a coordinator, not work your way in as maybe a special assistant. Come back and take the reins of a football team at the highest level after 10 years.
I don't think we really. I think the closest is Pete Carroll went away from the NFL for a while, coached USC, and then came back to Seattle. But he was still a head coach day in and day out, right? I don't know that we've seen anything like this before.
And that's why that's why it makes me wonder what's the how much like because we both know that the Raiders are not known for having a lot of like sympathy or remorse or leeway. Raider Nation is not forgiving.
No.
So you just wonder how much leeway are they giving him, or how much time do they say, "Hey, listen, we went 6-10 last year. If you go out there and you have a 8-8 or a 7-9 season, we'll understand because we know the Raiders aren't going to deal with six consecutive seasons of 500 football. You got to win, and there's no reason they shouldn't win. David Carr is one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. If he hangs around, you have the best running back in the NFL. Marshawn Lynch doesn't get tackled very often.
I don't know how much longer Marshawn Lynch has left in his legs, though. He's one that stepped. He retired for a year.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, if he stays, there are pieces there. They have, in my opinion, one of the best linebackers. Slash, I know they haven't put his hand on the dirt a couple times. Is Khalil Mack? That guy is.
Beast. He can play.
So there's pieces there. There's pieces there to win. I mean, if Derek Carr doesn't break his leg last year, I had them being a playoff push. They were there. They had all. It's kind of like Carson Wentz with Eagles this year. They had everything steamrolling, and their quarterback gets hurt. So there's pieces there. The 6-10 season, I think that was just a little bit of an off year kind of thing. Because if you think about it, if a coach goes like, I think they went 11-5 or 10-6 the year before, and then 6-10. Not too many coaches are losing their job for that. This was more of a, hey, we really want John Gruden, so you're going to fall on the sword and just get out of here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they walked Jack Del Rio out as Gruden was walking in. That was 100% why that happened.
So it just, I know this is a long walk for a short answer, but what do you give them in the way of leeway? Like, does he get a few years to kind of rebuild the way he wants it, or is this kind of a, hey, listen, there's pieces here. We expect playoff.
I think he gets a 2-year honeymoon.
Okay.
Really, unless things absolutely fall apart. Like, if we're looking at year two and we're halfway through the season and they have 3 wins, Chucky better be really glad that he got that $100 million guaranteed.
Exactly.
But I think with the personality that he is, he's going to get a 2-year honeymoon. And after that, it's got to start to be playoffs.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's about what I'm thinking.
I agree with the same thing. Like, this is John Gruden. He's the thing that kind of throws me off is for how much they reached for him and how much they really pushed for him. By all accounts, he's a 500 coach in the NFL. His numbers almost mirror being 50-50 in his overall record. So it's one of those things where it's like, again, you're buying the personality. You're buying the persona. You're buying the fan favoritism.
The culture that comes with Gruden. Yeah.
Because I mean, he does know how to coach football. We've established that. And like you said, he has a Super Bowl. I know in previous podcasts we talk about it is his Super Bowl. He's the coach. He won them those games. But was it really his team? I mean, as we said, Tony Dungy built that team, got the axe. Gruden gets traded to Tampa, and first year walks off with a Super Bowl. And it's like one of those things where you're like, while this is your Super Bowl, you coached them to it, you had to call the plays, have the personnel the right way, a lot of these players were not your players. A draft class was your players and maybe some free agent signing. Other than that, the defensive scheme, the offensive talent, and that defense was insane. I looked back at the roster a while back. That defense is one of the scariest defenses I can remember seeing. I mean, I think they scored like 3 or 4 touchdowns on defense in that Super Bowl. It's one of those things where you have a Super Bowl, yes, but do you kind of have a Super Bowl with an asterisk? Because not a lot of it was you.
Yeah, no, he gets it because he still took them to the mountaintop.
Exactly.
But it was absolutely, he didn't build the team. He pushed them over the edge.
But the funny thing, too, though, is
there's value to that, though.
The funny thing is, who did they play in that Super Bowl? His Raiders. So you kind of wonder, would he have gotten a Super Bowl anyway? Because the team he was coaching made the Super Bowl against the team he is coaching.
All I'm taking away from that is he knows how to lose the Raiders a Super Bowl.
I would take it as that, or you would take it as he can get two teams to the Super Bowl in the same year. It's however
it's
you want to look at it. But I think we're kind of in agreement on that, that Gruden's a bit of a reach, but it's interesting to see what they're going to do. It really is.
Right. I'm going to tune in, right? And that's what they've done. Yep. They've assured people are going to watch.
100%. I don't disagree with that at all. I think it's an interesting decision, to say the least, because it could end up being the smartest decision they ever make. The Raiders could go out there and be in the playoffs contending for a Super Bowl next year, or they could be back in the middle of the pack like they were this year, and, you know, there's always hope for the following year. It's kind of one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll, since we're coming to the end here, we'll shoot over to predictions. We've got four games this week that are going to lead to a Super Bowl here coming up. First game of the weekend is on Saturday at 4. We've got Atlanta playing Philadelphia. Who do you like and why?
So Atlanta's actually the favorite at this one, even though Philly's at home. I agree with that. I think Atlanta wins. I think it's by more than the 3-point spread. I think they win. I'm going to take 7 points. I think Atlanta wins. They woke up. I don't know that they make it much further than this, but they're starting to remind people that they were in the Super Bowl for a reason last year.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you on this, that it's going to be Atlanta, but it's going to be Atlanta because Carson Wentz isn't playing. If this was Carson Wentz, this team, I think that team gets steamrolled. But it's Atlanta. They did it last year. They got to the Super Bowl. Matt Ryan, for, you know, in my opinion, some of his inconsistencies, is still a good quarterback. They still have an offense that can do things, and their defense can stop them. I think Nick Foles runs into his – I think he reaches his ceiling here. I think he's done what he can with them and kept them moving as long as he could, and I think this is where they kind of reach the end. So I'll agree with you, Atlanta, and 7 sounds about right. I would say – I don't think this is going to be a big blowout. That you know, one player can't alter it that bigly.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, Nick Foles is going to put on his underwear and the little waistband's still going to say Nick Foles.
Exactly.
So there's only so much he can do.
Yeah, exactly. The late game is Tennessee-New England. I think I already know the answer to this, but I'll ask it anyway, because if you ask me, it shouldn't be Tennessee-New England in this game. So actually, you know what? Since I've already given my opinion here, I'll say it. New England's going to win this game by 3 touchdowns. It's not going to be a close game.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that I'm going to have something else to watch because I think it'll be over by half. I mean, New England is opened up as a 13-point favorite, which to be a 2-touchdown favorite in a playoff game, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unheard of. It doesn't happen. It really only happens if the Patriots are involved in the game, if you go back and look at them. I think they walked through this. I'm not all that impressed with Tennessee.
Yeah, no, it's if you, I mean, and that's the thing we talked about earlier with the was it a fumble between that call, the Mariota tip off the helmet catch that was over the line, and the fact that the best player in the game gets knocked out by a dirty hit and completely alters the game. This should be New England Kansas City, which in my opinion would have been a really fun game to watch. Those are two high powered offenses that I think it would have been a great. I mean, Alex Smith had like almost 300 yards passing in the first half.
Well, when did they play? Real early in the season, was it week 1?
Yeah, they played like week 1. They did. They played week 1.
Yeah, Kansas City won. Oh, that would have been great to see that again.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. A couple bad calls, and again, you can't put it all on bad calls, but when a couple bad calls and the guy who got me a lot of fantasy points this year, Travis Kelce, gets hurt, this shouldn't have been this game, and I think Tennessee's kind of living on borrowed time, and I think it's just going to be up here pretty soon. Okay, so
agree.
Following the next day at 1:00, we've got the Jacksonville Jaguars of the Boar Fest last week play the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'll let you go first on this one. What do you got?
Okay, so I can never bring myself to pick Blake Bortles ever.
Attaboy.
That game last week was so bad.
I didn't even watch it. I just saw the highlights, which meant I saw 1 minute of highlights.
10-3, right?
Yeah.
They combined scored less points than the lead that Kansas City gave up in their game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you need to know there. I like watching Pittsburgh, though, and I'm going to like watching Pittsburgh win. 7-point favorites, I'll give them 10. I mean, Jacksonville's defense is going to hang in there, but Pittsburgh, they've got an opportunistic defense, too. I just think they're going to hang up on them, and this is when Bortles turns back into the pumpkin that he is.
Yeah, I have to, again, we're kind of agreeing on this a lot. I like Jacksonville. I've watched them throughout the year a little bit, and I think they're a team on the rise, and we're going to see some success. I don't think Bortles is the guy to do that for them. I think that's the piece. He's a marginal quarterback. He's not your get us to that next level, put us in talks for being consistent in the playoffs, deep in the playoffs every year. So, and again, you're going against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have Roethlisberger, who even when he has an off year is still a top quarterback. He can still do it. You've got the best running back in the NFL. You've got the best receiver. I don't know that he is, in my opinion, I don't know that he's the best receiver, but he is up there as one of the best receivers. You've got Juju Smith-Schuster, who came out of nowhere, and you've got a defense that is just, it's horrifying. So, I don't think that they're, I think they're going to go well past what they're favored on. I could see this being a 2 or 3 score game, and Pittsburgh rolls on.
Yep.
And lastly, this is a game that kind of interests me, and I think
this is the game of the week.
Yeah, I think I have a weird opinion on this one, but New Orleans takes on Minnesota, and I got to tell you, this is kind of fascinating because Case Keenum, if he's not with Minnesota next year, has easily earned himself a starting contract somewhere. This guy has done everything he needed to do to keep this team right in the thick of it. I know they have a great defense, but they lose their running back early on. Their quarterback, who they're totally invested in, goes away. They're so in on Case Keenum that Teddy Bridgewater, who 2 years ago was going to be their QB of the future, doesn't even see field time. They're literally sticking with the backup, but they're going against the guy who, in my opinion, is like just one of the most amazing quarterbacks I've ever seen. And you and I got a chance to see him like 2 years ago in person. And this guy can do just insane things with the football again in Drew Brees. And I got to say, I think same with Foles. I think Keenum has done everything he can, taking them as far as he can get them. You're going against a guy who's just superior. He's just superior in every way. So I think New Orleans wins this one, but I think we're going to see a real show. I think we're going to see like a 27-24 shootout.
So my heart agrees with you. If I have to pin my flag to anyone, Drew Brees is never a bad option. I mean, especially with the running attack that finally he has. The
guy's got a ring, and he did it without a running attack. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I want to pick New Orleans, but, hey, I can't agree with you on all four of them.
No, absolutely not.
Minnesota's a 5-point favorite. They're at home. They've had a week to rest. They are arguably the most balanced team in the league. I'm going to take them to win this one at home. I think that place is going to be so loud. And, hey, part of it is I want to see a team play for a Super Bowl in their home stadium. It's never happened. We got a shot. Skol Vikings.
Hey,
please make it happen.
As much as I wanted us to agree across the board, I know we can't. So we're gonna go Atlanta, New England, Pittsburgh, and then we're split.
Yeah, we're split there.
Now I'll ask this because by the time we do the next one, these will be over with, and hopefully we'll get another one in before the next ones. What's the Super Bowl matchup? Who are we seeing in the Super Bowl a month from now?
I think from the NFC, it's whoever wins this New Orleans-Minnesota game.
Okay, I'll agree.
So I'm taking Minnesota. So Minnesota, if New Orleans ends up winning, I think it's New Orleans. And then Tennessee from the AFC. Sorry, wow, Tennessee.
Tennessee,
wow.
Okay.
The team that's walking over Tennessee is what I meant to say.
Tennessee's going to give the Super Bowl tickets to the other team. Gotcha. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm going to go burn my phone and, like, all of my opinions. That was really bad. New England from the AFC.
New England, okay.
Wow.
All right, so you're assuming that New England will beat Pittsburgh, and Atlanta will lose to the winner of this other game.
Agree. Yep.
I'm going to agree with you. Again, we're agreeing. I'm going to agree with you on both regards. I don't think we're going to see a repeat of last year's Super Bowl. I think that whoever wins this one, because if Case Keenum wins this one, he's done it. He's proven what he needs to prove, that there should be no more doubt. Because, again, New Orleans to me is just a better football team against over Atlanta. New Orleans has just got too many pieces. So I agree with you, New England and winner of this NFC game. So New England, New Orleans, a couple news. And it's going to be enjoyable, but sadly, I don't want to make these predictions that early. There's still time, but I think we're going to see a sixth ring for Mr. Michigan.
Yeah, and he still won't retire.
Yeah, he wins another one, he's going to keep going.
Oh, yeah, he'll go until something makes him stop. I mean, it's going to have to be like a Joe Theismann leg snaps in half type of deal.
So, I mean, it's about what you can expect, but I think we're going to see another ring for him, and I'm sorry to say, it's not really much of a surprise.
Well, all that's left now is to bet on the Gatorade color.
It's true, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, let's get through these, and we'll next week we'll throw some prop bets out there, and we'll have a little bit of fun with it.
Sounds good.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. Happy New Year, everyone. We're happy to be back. You know, I know I can't speak for us, but I think you'll agree with me. We've been chomping at the bit to do this. And hopefully next week we'll have the full cast here and we'll have some fun with it. But I'm going to thank the guy that showed up. My thanks to Russ Ivanek.
Hey, I got nothing better to do, I guess.
Yeah.
It was a blast, man. Thanks
this is a great time.
Together.
So we appreciate it. As always, thanks for listening. Please follow, comment, and we'll keep going from there. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.
Armchair Sports Talk. If your childhood dreams of being an athlete had a voice.